All right. So someone sent in a few different interesting shilas. Are you allowed to pop a pimple on Shabbos? Right? In case anyone has pimples. So the rule is that if you are in pain, and because of the pain, you want to pop your pimple, then it's fine to pop the pimple in order to let the the pus out. And you can't squeeze it to allow blood out, but you can pop it in order to get the pus out. And you're not allowed to make a perfect opening. But only thing you're allowed to do is pop it in order to help with the pain from and the pus, but not more than that. Now, as far as the pimple, someone wanted to know, are you allowed to lie to the police? In Eretz Yisrael, it's very relevant that the police are cracking down. They let you travel for certain things and not for other things. So the question is, are you allowed to lie to them, tell them that you're going for this and not for that? So the rule is that we don't lie. It says midbar sheker tirchak. We stay far away from lies, and we don't want to do them. So you definitely don't lie. The question is if you have to tell them the whole truth. Meaning, if you're going to do two things, you can definitely tell them the one thing that they allow. You don't need to volunteer everything you plan on doing. But definitely, I wouldn't recommend lying. That's not a good thing. Another question someone asked was, are certain Svardi Hakshirim in Eretz Yisrael specifically, are they good? And what's interesting is, as far as the actual halachas, the Svardim are very makbid and they keep more chumras than the Ashkenazim in many areas, which is fine. It just happens to be one of the largest Svardi Hakshirim, known as Beit Yosef, just doesn't have a good operation and good oversight. And therefore, even though the halachas are very makbid with and they can do a good job, but you can't trust the stores and the restaurants just because the operation is too huge and they don't have good oversight. So it's not a Sephardi Ashkenazi thing. It's more of that general hashkacha is known as not being on the ball when it comes to watching what's going on in their institutions, in their restaurants. Another question was asked as far as shatness goes. Do you have to check everything for shatness? For example, you have a suit that says 100% wool or 100% wool and polyester, which is not shatness. Do you need to check it? So what's interesting is if it is a small minority, then there's no need to check it. And it seems to be, based on the information I was given, that cheap suits have no shatness if they advertise no shatness. Whereas expensive suits, like $500 or more, we'll call it, those suits tend to have shatness even though it's not advertised. So if the label says shatness, definitely have to check it. If the label does not say shatness, so then there is no need to check that suit or anything like that. Another shatness that someone sent in, Aaron, I guess, not my father, Aaron Lieberman, I'll send this to him. So he asks the following thing. Let's say you have a nap in the middle of the day. So when you wake up, do you need to say moda'ani? Do you need to say other brachas? So it's interesting that definitely no brachas are needed, right? You don't need a new brachas Torah. No other brachas are needed. As far as moda'ani, I've never seen that the shayla brought down. I don't think you need to say it. The minhag, I believe, is not to say it. Even though you definitely took that hour, 2 hour nap and maybe you returned your neshama. I don't know exactly how that works, but it's interesting. I didn't see it brought down, but if you want to say, you definitely could say it. But as far as other brachas are concerned, there is no need to make other brachas. Oh, hello, Mr. Lieberman just tuned in. Aaron Lieberman, I just discussed your shaila as far as when you wake up in the morning, when you have a nap. So there's no need to make any other brachas. Modani is optional. If you like, you could say it. I believe the minhag is not to say it, but you definitely could if you want. However, other brachas you don't need to make, and you do wash negelvasser because you may have touched some covered parts, so you would want to clean your hands for that. And the last shayla also sent in by you was as far, this is a very tricky shayla. Let's say in the middle of a meal and you bench, but you have a hot coffee. And the only reason why you're benching is because you want to change venue. You want to go somewhere else. And you have a hot drink. You want to take it with you. You need to make a shahakal on your drink. So you bench, but before you bench, you had das to continue drinking that thing or eating something. Like let's say you have a large lollipop that you plan on eating for the next 5 hours, but you're in the middle of a meal and now you benched. You need to make a shahakal. The answer is yes, because benching ends the meal. Whether you like it or not, it ends that. And therefore, anything you want to eat afterwards is going to have to require, does require another bracha. And in your case, why? Let's say you made a brain of fashos. Is that any different? It makes no difference. Anytime you make an after bracha, brain of fashos, on the benching, it ends whatever you were doing. Whether you like it or not, whether you thought about it or not, what you've done is over. And therefore, you cannot continue eating without a bracha. Okay, that's a wrap on certain shilas. For those who just tuned in, you can pop a pimple if it causes you pain. You should not lie to the police. We love Sephardi Hasherim, just they need to make sure that there's good oversight, which one large one in Israel does not have. Check for shatness if the label says so, or any suit that is expensive, over $500, and that is that. Now I'm going to move on to halachas of, we're up to Dalin Minim. So last week we discussed the halachas of building the sukkah. Now I would like to discuss the halachas of Dalin Minim. So it would definitely be better if I had a lulav and esrog and hadas and ravas here with me, which I don't. So we will have to just visualize. And we're not going to be paskening every shayla that could come up. It's impossible to do so. What we will do is give out the general things, what we're looking for and what we're looking to avoid. And then as things come up, we can discuss it intelligently with your local Orthodox rabbi. So as far as the lulav goes, there are three parts to the lulav that you need to recognize. Part one is called the shedra. The shedra is the spine. The spine is not the brown part that you look through the leaves to get to. The spine is normally the shiny green part, and that's what's supposed to be facing you. So let's just say the lulav is like a V. It's the point of the V. Not exactly as extreme as the V, but it's the point of the V. It's the shiny green part. That is what should be facing you the whole time. That's what we call the shedra. Now, if you follow the shedra up, a lot of things break off of them. Those are what we call leaves. So a lot of the leaves will be breaking off away. They're like exits from the shedra being the main highway. The leaves are the exits. Then when the highway ends, it ends on a local road. There's no left turn. There's no right turn. That's what we call the tiamis. The tiamis is the middle leaf, which is direct outgrowth of the shedra. Okay, so we have the shedra, the leaves, and the tiamis, which is the middle leaf, directly outgrowth of the shedra. All of the leaves and the tiamis are doubled. They're all double leaves, and they have to be doubled over. If they are splitting apart, that's when we have a problem. So if some of the leaves are split apart, it's no big deal. If a majority of them split apart, it's a big deal. If the middle leaf is split, it could be a big deal. So the ideal is to not have it split at all. When you check your lulav, you want to check the middle leaf to make sure it's not split. If it's split a little bit, it's okay. If it's split a lot, you should consult with a local Orthodox rabbi. That could be a problem. If the middle leaf is split a lot, depends how far, but that could be a problem. Now, another issue that comes up is if it's chopped off at the top. That doesn't have to be like a major haircut. Even a little cut at the top of the middle leaf would possibly the whole lulav. So you want to check to make sure that it comes to a very sharp point. And you want to check that with a good eye to make sure it comes to a sharp point and that it wasn't hot or hacked and that a little bit of it was snipped off at the top. You also want to make sure that it's not dry. Dry will show itself being white or crumbly to the touch. As long as it's not white or crumbly to the touch, brown is fine. The other things are fine, but not crumbly or white. Another issue is if it's split. Even if it's not split enough to invalidate it because it's split, but if it's split and looks like a fork, it's called a hymnic. If it looks like that, that's a fork. That's a terrible thing. That would possibly the whole lulav. If the tiamis, the middle leaf, is split like that. If it's split like this, if there's a little air light, sunlight, that's okay. But if it looks like a fork, then it's a problem. Somewhere in between is questionable and should be shown to a good lulav checker. And the last thing, as far as lulav goes, is if it's bent. You ideally want it straight like a sword, but if it is bent like a sickle, that's a problem. Meaning, you want to hold the shedra out. If it's making a left turn or a right turn or a downward turn, that's a problem. If it's a little bit backwards turn, that's okay. But you want the shedra to be straight and not curving left, right, or forward. Backwards is okay. And as far as the kaira, like the brown leaves and stuff that's on there, that's fine. If it has a little knepple over there that's like bent over the top, that's a machlokas. If that's a hiddur or if that's terrible, so you can pick what you like. But ideally, you want them straight and no bent over. Okay, that is as far as laws of the lulav. Moving on to the esrog, what you want to avoid by an esrog is you don't want it dried out, like from last year. You want it nice and moist. However, do not test it. Do not poke it and check to see if it's moist. Because if you make a hole in it, you may invalidate it. So you do not want any holes, and you don't want it peeled. You want to check to make sure that there are no spots that were peeled off. The way you would know it is if you start smelling a strong smell, then you know most likely the something was peeled off or if it's changing color. Not every time that there's a peel or change of color is a puzzle, but it definitely is not great to have and should be asked. If you're sensing that there's something peeled off or a change of color, that may be an issue and you should show it. As far as what we primarily look for in an esrog is that it's called clean. You want it that it's clean. Now, what does clean mean? Clean means no dots. Now, brown dots are fine, yellow dots are fine, green dots are fine. We do not like black dots, and we do not like white dots. So if you look at your esrog and you're seeing brown and white dots, try to switch it in. Not every dot will invalidate it, but if you look at it from, let's say, you know, a foot away, and you're recognizing and you're seeing brown and white, get rid of it. If you need to have a magnifying glass, and only with that do you see it, so then that's not a problem. The other thing is blisters. You do not want to have blisters. Now, the bumps are beautiful, but blisters are not beautiful. So now it depends how many blisters and where the blisters are located. But an esrog that has blisters, like this pimple that we spoke about before, it looks like a pussy pimple. If you have that on your esrog, you want to probably switch it or at least ask if the location of that pimple will invalidate it. You do not want to have a purely green one. If it's purely green, no signs of yellow, that could be a problem. You want it, green is fine as long as there are some tints of yellow that may be heading that direction. Ideal is to have a yellow one. A black one is no good. If it is round like a baseball, that's also no good. You want it shapely, but not round like a ball. And you ideally would like it the size of around 2 eggs worth, around at least that size, which most are, but you definitely want to check to make sure yours is as well. Moving on to a hadas. By the hadasim, what we're looking for in hadasim are what's called mishulash. Mishulash means three leaves coming out of the same line. Now, some are makbid to having three out of the same, whatever that's called, the same little growth spot. But that's not ma'ake. What you really want, at least if the three of them are coming out, if you were to take a string and wrap the string around, that all three leaves would be coming out from that same latitude. That's what we call mishulash. Now, you do not need to have the whole hadas mishulash. It's a hiddur. To have what's called mishulash bekulo, you check on the packages, you're going to see there's two types of packages. There's one that's called mishulash bekulo, which means entirely mishulash. There's another one that's called mishulash rubo, majority. Majority is kosher. Kulo is outstanding. So if you can afford it, you would want to go for the mishulash bekulo. If you can't, mishulash rubo is fine. Majority, however, you run the risk that it started off majority, but after a few good shakes, it's no longer majority. And therefore, you would want to aim for a heavy majority, if not kulo. Now, how big is this hadas? How much does it have to be? So that hadas has to be 3 tefachim. 3 tefachim, the most lenient shita is 24 centimeters. So you would want to have ideally 24 centimeters starting from the top down. That is mishulash bekulo. That's what you'd be aiming for. The chaznish wouldn't want 30 centimeters. So somewhere in the 24 to 30 centimeter range is what you're aiming for. Ideally, that's all mishulash, 3 leaves on every row. But b'di'eved, if it is rubo, that's also okay. That is the hadas. Now, if it's snipped off at the top, that may invalidate it. So you want to check to make sure it comes that the leaves are growing out the top and that there was no snip off at the top. If it is dry, like white or crumbly, that is also a problem. You do not want that. If it is starting to rot a little bit, that's okay. If it's starting to wilt, that's okay. But it's white or crumbly that we want to avoid. And that is a wrap on the hadas. Moving on to the arava. The arava also cannot be dried out, white or crumbly. It cannot be snipped off at the top. Otherwise, almost all the aravas are fine. If they're starting to rot a little bit, it's fine. You don't need them brown, so you don't need it green and fresh. It's beautiful if it is, but it doesn't have to be. But you definitely don't want it snipped or missing majority of its leaves. As long as it has majority of its leaves and it's not dry or snipped, then the aravas are fine. Now, in general, we do not like to steal the whole year round, and specifically on Sukkot, do not steal your dalet minim, because if you do, you will not be yotze. What you do are allowed to do is borrow. Now, after the first or second day, you can even borrow someone without knowing. You can't steal it, take it home with you, but if you're in shul and you see someone's nice little Vanessa, you can turn it down a little bit, you can go ahead and pick it up and take it. But that, and just, I mean, shake it right there. But that is only from the second in Israel or third day and on in America. The first day or two, it cannot be borrowed. You have to own it. Now, how do you own it? You have two ways of owning something. You can either buy it yourself before Yontif, or you can get a present. So if you do not have your own, and it's the first or second day of Yontif in America, what you need to do is have your friend give it to you. What's called matana amanas lahachzer. You give it to you as a present, and on conditionally that you will return it to him. If you do not return it, you're not yotze. So that is what you want to do if you do not have your own. Family members is a big machlokas. Husband, wife, sons, daughters, do you need to own your own, or can you just use your father's or husband's? Can you just pick it up and use it, or does the husband or father have to give it to you as a matana manas lahachzer? It is a machlokas. If you remember and you're able to give it as a present, amanas lahachzer, that's great. But if you don't, you can rely on the opinions that say one family can use one without doing any shtick, and that is fine. Women are pater from shaking lulav. However, they are allowed to, and if they want to, they can. If you're Ashkenazi, you make a bracha. Ashkenazi women make brachas. Sephardi women do not make brachas. Now, as far as the actual shaking, there are many minhagim of how to shake your lulav. You want to get all six directions. How to get all six, different minhagim, you can really do whatever you did last year, but everyone has their own minhag, and follow your minhagim. If you don't have a minhag, pick one. Now, you make the bracha, you want to turn the esrog upside down, so you pick up the lulav in one hand, and the esrog in the other hand upside down, make your bracha, two brachas on the first day, which would be on Sunday this year, one bracha every day from Monday and on, and then you make your bracha, and then remember to turn the esrog right side up. Right side up means pitum up, so upside down means the ukitz, which is the stem side down. So you start with stem side up, pitum down, make your bracha, and then flip it over. Then you have your shakes, so you picked it up, you made your brachas, turned it over, then you shake your lulav. Now, which hand should you hold it in? Lefties and righties have different rules over here. So righties hold the lulav in their right hand. Lefties hold the lulav in their machlokas. So righties for sure, no machlokas, lulav in the right hand, esrog in the left. When it comes to lefties, it's a big fight. The minhag olam is to switch it around and to have your lulav in your left hand and your esrog in your right hand. The stronger hand has the lulav. That is a minhag olam. But by lefties, it is a machlokas. Some try to accommodate both opinions and do it in both hands. To do it left hand first and then switch and do the right hand. But publicly, for halal and shul, to do it in your left hand if you are a lefty. Now, as far as the actual bundle goes, you would want to tie three ties around the actual lulav, not the dasim leravas, three ksharim, three knots on the actual lulav. It makes it pretty. You want them to be a double knot. The minhag is to have those cool little thingies. If you know how to do it, great. If not, you can just do a double knot the way I do. It doesn't look so pretty, but I like it. And you can just take off a little bit before Yantiv. But this all has to be done before Yantiv because you're not allowed to do a double knot on Yantiv. So you can rip off a leaf or two of your lulav and then make it into smaller pieces and tie three rings around the actual lulav. Then when it comes to tying together your hadasim and aravais, so you put it in the either different minhagim, some have a klechikol, which holds them. Some, if you're Sephardi for sure, I believe, don't use the klechikols. You do it straight on. Both are great. Whatever you do, you want them all tied together. So then you can take another knot and tie the hadasim, the aravais, onto the actual lulav. And you want that to also to be a double knot. All this has to be done before Yantif. Therefore, this year, you should do it on Friday, even though you're not shaking it until Sunday, because you cannot make the double knot on Matzah Shabbos or on Sunday. So that you would want to do in advance. If you do not do it in advance, you cannot do a double knot. What you should do is a bow. A bow is mutter to be done on Yantif, and that's what you should do if you don't do it in advance. The hadasim are on the right, the aravas are on the left. The way to remember that is American League, or that's my way to remember it, A-L. Aravas on the left, hadasim on the right. You want the hadasim to be a little bit higher than the aravas. A little bit higher, not significantly, but a little bit higher. And this is something which a lot of people do not do, but you should make sure the hadasim are a tefach below the end of the shedra. So you follow the shedra up. Once the shedra turns into tiyamis, that's when the shedra ends. You want to take a fist or a ruler and measure around 8 centimeters. And you do not want your hadasim above the 8 centimeter mark. So what I recommend is when you're tying your three knots on your lulav, the highest knot should be 8 centimeters or more below the end of the shedra. And that'll be your line, your divider. You do not want any hadasim or ravas going above that. And that's a hiddur for the mitzvah, and it's better for shaking. And that is what should be done. And that is a wrap, mostly. Yeah, no eating before lulav and before taking lulav and esrog. Machlokes, if you should shake your lulav and esrog before davening or after davening. Some do both, some do this. Also, whether to do in a sukkah. These are all hidurim, but you could do it anytime, anywhere. Starting from Netzach Hama is the best time. Netzach Hama is the best time. Hello, Mr. J. Netzach Hama is the best time to shake. You could do it as early as Alois HaShachar, as late as Shkia, but earlier the better, and that's when you should shake. If you're davening at home, you still should say Hoshanas. Hoshanas, if you're in shul, you'll walk around the beam around the Sefer Torah. If you're at home, there's no need to walk around your dining room table, but you should still say Hoshanas and daven for the well-being of everyone. If when you're buying your lulav and esrog, you have two choices. You should add a shlish, which means a third. Let's say you have two choices. One is $100, one is $200. No need to go for the 200. But if one is 100 and one is 133, you should go for the 133. If one is 100, one is 150, it's debatable because after that, it's a shlish. But anyway, within reason, you definitely want to add and make your dalaminim very nice and beautiful. Ketanim should shake lulav. They should and make brachas, and they cannot own their own. Sorry, if you can buy for them, they own their own, fine. But if you give them a lulav, they cannot give it back to you. So therefore, you do not want to give a katan, a lulav, on the first day because you cannot get it back from him because he does not have the ability to do it. And you should make the bracha and shake it standing up. And that is a wrap on Hilchas Dalaminim. I would now want to talk a little bit about Rosh Hashanah. Right, we do not have a parsha this week. We have Rosh Hashanah, which is huge. So just a few different things to think about on Rosh Hashanah. That the focus of Rosh Hashanah is not the apple and the honey, even though they're geshmak. The focus of Rosh Hashanah is the fact that we are coronating the king. We are allowed to ask for our own requests and daven for life and request for a cure to all things in the world. Absolutely, you could, you should. But that's not the focus of the day. The focus of the day is accepting upon yourself that Hashem is the king over you, over your family, over your nation, over the world. We're being mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are anointing him. And when we blow the shofar, that's like a horn at the inauguration. Trumpets are blown when you inaugurate a king. That's a shofar. Now, the shofar has a lot more going on. We'll get to it in a second. But the idea is overly, constantly repeat to yourself, Hashem, you the king. And you're accepting him upon yourself. And that's our job, right? Rosh Hashanah is one of the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. 10 days of tshuva. But in Rosh Hashanah, we don't say vidoy. We don't mention our veras. So why is it called Aseres Yimei Tshuva? Teretz is, the first part of tshuva is to recognize that there's a king there that you have to do tshuva to. So the first 2 days, don't even mention the fact that you've done averas. That's nobody's business. No king wants to be anointed by a bunch of losers. So don't say that you've done averas. What you want to do is to say, you are the king, we accept upon you. The next 8 days, then you can start pouring out your heart how bad you are. But on Rosh Hashanah, that's the theme, that's the focus. Now, when we get to the shofar, so besides the horn at the inauguration, the shofar is also supposed to wake us up, realize that we got to start doing things, not vidui yet, but just wake up, recognize that there's stuff to fix. But also, it's a mitzvah, the race of shofar, and have that in mind, that's the most important. Another thing to have in mind is the akidah. We use a horn from an ram. What we want to do is tap into the schusim of the akidah. Avraham Avinu did for us a tremendous chesed by withstanding this test, and we tap into that schus. The Meiri says you should have in mind, if you would be tested, you would also pass a test. And with that, you're going to Rosh Hashanah with the schus of the akidah. Okay, so that's what you have in mind during the shofar blowing. And the last thing I want to highlight is that debatable how much effort you should put into davening for your personal tefillahs. But as we said, it's definitely normal and you should after you've anointed the king. But also perhaps this year we should have an added emphasis on tefillah for other people. That it's been a wild year. Baruch Hashem, we survived. Amidst Hashem. But the community has been affected as a whole, for sure. Some individuals, our shuls have been closed, our yeshiva has been closed, and that may be the time to also, not only, but also focus on a tefillah for the other person, for the tzibur as a whole, for the yeshivas as a whole, for the shuls as a whole. That could be an added emphasis this year, and everyone can add whatever they want to add. All right, that's a wrap. Everyone should have a tzibur, a chasim, a toiva. Good event. Yeah, I miss them next week at the same time. We'll do Hilchas Hashanah Rabbah, Simchas Torah, and random other halachas that come up. Have a great night. I will talk to you all later.
Good. Thank you.